Time to bring in Jake Rowe from Dogs 247 and 247sports.com. Jake, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. It's a beautiful day. It's the bye week. The Dogs are undefeated. Hey, life is good right now. So I know a lot of Georgia fans feel exactly the same way. Yesterday was the only day of the week, I guess, where the beat writers like yourself get a chance to see the Dogs and see the practice field. And it sounds like, as far as the injury report goes, things are looking better for the Dogs.
They are, yeah. It definitely looks like Georgia's got good news on that front. You know, I think if you had to choose, hey, which guys do you really need to get back, which ones can you, you know, if you could say, you know, hey, these are three guys that we really need to have for Florida, I think the three that you would want were on the practice field yesterday with Terry Godwin, Trent Thompson, Reggie Carter. So I think, you know, getting those guys back are big. I think you would also really like to get David Marshall back too, and I think that pretty much puts you at full strength in terms of your one and two deep. But you know, three out of four, you know, ain't bad. You know, that not exactly meatloaf, but I'm coming close there. And, and you know, so I think that, you know, that's definitely something that Georgia can build off of, you know, going into these, you know, these 11 days before Florida, especially when you consider that they'll get Friday, Saturday, Sunday completely off. Those guys will get a chance to really rest up. Your hope is that, you know, Terry looked like he was going full speed yesterday, so that's a good sign. And your hope is that Reggie Carter and Trent Thompson, maybe David Marshall, will be ready to go full speed by Monday.
Why do we get, like, for some guys, we don't get specifically what's wrong with them, and other guys, we do? On the injury
seems
stuff.
To me, seems to me that distinction is being made on concussions. You know, that's a little, a tad bit speculative on my part. I'm confident that that's the truth, but I'm not 100% that that's the truth. But I think that when guys have concussions, they're undisclosed, and otherwise they're not, because that's, you know, you look at Reggie Carter. I mean, I think anybody that's ever seen anybody get a concussion in a game and you know, have it diagnosed or whatever, I think you watch that Tennessee game and you realize that he did have, you know, some sort of injury like that, and so I think that's basically what you're running into there. He never did disclose Reggie Carter's injury. He hasn't disclosed the Quan Hawkins muckle. The only guy he's told us all year long that had a concussion, I think it might have slipped out because he hasn't said it since, was Rashad Roundtree.
Yeah, well, what about Marshall? I mean, are you saying that he's dealing with a concussion, or is that just kind of what we're thinking?
That's kind of the word. That's kind of what we've heard. And listen, I'm not going out there and saying that's, you know, definitely the truth, but somebody I trust, you know, gave me that information.
Yeah.
During the game on Saturday, and so I kind of buy it myself. I think that's probably what he's dealing with, especially when you see a guy that, you know, listen, he's not out there dressed out. He's not out there riding a bike on the side. I mean, usually, you know, when guys are doing those type of things and they're not wearing a walking boot or on crutches or something, they're out there getting some conditioning work and practice, unless it's a concussion. And so I think that's probably what he's dealing with at this point.
Plus, too, I mean, you guys, and I say you guys, the guys that are out there every day, the beat guys, y'all been very, I think, cooperative about how you report and don't report injuries. And I know there was a little, you know, incident last year about, or maybe it was back in the spring, about someone getting hurt and then, you know, the parents finding out through social media. But at the same time with the HIPAA laws, you don't want to write something and then somebody come after you about that too. So I know it's kind of a tightrope that you have to walk there when you're talking about and writing about injuries.
Sure, yeah. And you know, I don't blame them for not wanting to put the concussion thing out there, simply because, I mean, that's such a hot-button issue these days, and head injuries are so serious, and you don't really gain one single thing by putting that out there. You don't gain anything by putting injuries out there at all. I mean, I'm not one of these folks that's real hard on coaches for being secret squirrel about injuries and stuff like that. But you know, especially with a concussion, because you've got a kid dealing with something that could be, you know, could go on for an undisclosed amount of time. I mean, you know, concussion can be, I think there was somebody in the NFL. It's Devontae Adams, after taking that hit from Danny Trevathan a few weeks ago.
Oof.
They said that he's got a history of being able to clear concussion protocol quickly, like he bounces back quickly from those. Well, there are some guys that they get a concussion, and that happened a few years ago. I can't remember who it was, but But, you know, 6-7 weeks later, he's still having concussion-like symptoms. You can't get rid of them. So everybody reacts to those differently. So why not just kind of keep it in-house, keep it under the hood, and you know, you figure it out and you know about it, and you know, everybody else doesn't know, so that everybody else doesn't ask. And not to mention, when you're talking about college athletes, you know, these kids read the red and black. They read, you know, Dogs 247 and UGA Sports and AJC and all that stuff. They know what's going on with the team. And so you don't want David Marshall having to go to class and answer questions about whether or not he has a concussion, and you know, from you know, the general public students and stuff like that. That's not cool. You know, not when you're dealing with something like that. I mean, if you got a boot on your leg, okay, there's nothing you can do about that. But you can do something about an injury like a concussion.
Jake Rowe, Dogs 247, 247sports.com.
Jake, Coach Smart said that the reason Jacob Eason didn't get into the game against Missouri was because he didn't want him to just be handing the ball off. I know a lot of Georgia fans worry that, you know, Eason not getting any reps could be bad if, like, Fromm were to get hurt or something. But, you know, do you kind of buy that that's the reason that Eason didn't get in, or is it just, you know, wanting to get Fromm as much experience as possible?
Well, I kind of took more from the way he said it, was we didn't really think about it. You know, I mean, listen, I mean, I may be making too much of it than there is. And, you know, I just don't think that – I think it's Jake Fromm's team. I think that's just the end of it there. I mean, whether he's just handing the ball off or not, it's a good opportunity to get him in there, keep him involved, keep his head in it, and he didn't. And so I think that, to me, is pretty telling – about, you know, where this team is headed, who the team's quarterback is. I mean, I'm not one of these folks out there saying Jacob Eason's transferring or anything like that. But I do think that the window of time for him to win that quarterback job is shrinking by the day. And you know, it's just hard not to really like what Jake Fromm has done. I wrote a story this morning. It's VIP, so it's kind of behind our paywall. But you know, I think Jake Fromm and the quarterback play for this team has been such a big difference in this offense, just because you look back at last season. I mean, I went and watched that Missouri game from last year, and Jacob Eason threw for a quarter mile in that game. I mean, he was good, threw the ball a million times because he had to, and he kind of felt bad for him, kind of running for his life at times too. But he also had, I think I counted six, and then if you want to get generous, seven different opportunities where he had to complete passes of 20 yards or more to either Terry Godwin or Reggie Davis, and missed all of them. One of them he got a pass interference on, so I think that was the one I said that was, you know, you could kind of take that one out. But you know, he had opportunities to make those big throws, to make Missouri pay for being too overly aggressive against the run, didn't do it. Jake Fromm did that against Missouri, against Mississippi State, against Notre Dame, and I think that was the difference in Georgia being able to pick up big yards late, to be able to pick up yards on the ground and get those running backs moving. So I think Fromm adds a different dynamic, a different level of steadiness and accuracy to that offense. I think the ceiling may be a tad bit lower, but at the same time, I don't care if you can go Uncle Rico and throw the ball over them their mountains. If you can't hit a guy, you know, open behind the defense, you can't give him a chance to catch the football. It doesn't really matter.
Man, you've gone Meatloaf and Napoleon Dynamite on us this morning, and we've
one
only
time,
been.
Dave, I'm on a roll.
I know, man. I love it. I love it, man. That is great stuff. Hey, Sam asked this question the other day, and I thought it was a pretty good one. So I'll steal it from him. The Dogs are all on a roll, no question about that. Ranked number three heading into the bye week. Of course, the nemesis is coming up next Saturday. What's a thing or two that you might be not necessarily concerned with, but, you know, just a little something that, you know, can kind of keep everybody grounded to kind of think about heading into that Florida game next Saturday?
Well, I think Georgia needs to get their pass rush figured out. I think Georgia rushed the passer extremely well for the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season. I think it kind of fell off after that. I think a lot of that is kind of on the shoulders of Davin Bellamy, and can probably be a little bit excused by the hand injury and the club he's had there. But at the same time, I also think that you know, Lorenzo Carter needs some more opportunities, especially with a defensive backfield healthy there. You know, I think he needs some more opportunities to get down there and rush the passer in those downs. I think a lot of times he's out there playing in space or as a stand-up guy stunting and doing and spying the quarterback. I think Georgia's got to get him more involved because he's dynamic there. So I think that's something you want to look at. I'm not too worried about the pass defense. I think as long as Georgia plays good, sound, fundamental football in the back end, they're going to limit teams. They're just too experienced and they're talented enough. And then offensively, I think that the one thing you've got to keep an eye on is I think Georgia is going to take a little bit of a step up in terms of talent they're going to play defensively. Kentucky's one of the better run defenses in the conference. Auburn's got some talent up front. Florida's got a great defensive coordinator in my mind, and Randy Shannon, and they've got some good linebackers and defensive linemen. So I think that offensive line really needs to get better in these next 2 days. You know, these next 2 days during the bye week are their physical days. They're their Tuesday, Wednesday days, and Georgia's really going to be getting after it and smacking the pads here in the next couple of days. So I think that offensive line has got to take it seriously and continue to improve. And, they're going to have I think the most concerning thing, you know, if you're a team, and this comes with the territory, if you're going to win it all, what you got to deal with is that bullseye on your back. You're going to get everybody's best shot. Everybody's going to be loading up that right hand to throw the hook, try to knock you out. And if you're not ready for it, they're going to land one, and you know you're going to be spitting chiclets. That's just how it is. And so I think that Georgia has to weather that storm. They're probably going to have a game here in the next five where a team comes out and smacks them right dead in the mouth, gets up, you know, 10-3 or 14-6, 14-3 on them. And they're going to have to battle back. So I think that those are the things you have to kind of be concerned about with this team.
Spitting chiclets.
I love it. I love it.
Just continuing to come with the fire this morning, Jake.
Exactly. Good stuff.
But,
I try to be entertaining to you guys. I know sometimes I just get to talk and ball and get a little boring. So it's the bye week. We loosen up on the bye week.
That's right. Not boring to us, though. We love it.
Here's a topic that a lot of Georgia fans will not find boring, and that's the Justin Fields commitment and what it could possibly lead to. You know, I saw Fields down in the field before the game against Missouri, and there was almost like a aura, like a glow around him. And like, you know, everybody. Yeah, exactly like that. But, you know, one thing that people thought was going to happen with the Fields commitment was kind of the floodgates start to open here. What's in terms of recruiting, should we be expecting some big-time targets to maybe come Georgia's way here pretty soon?
I think Georgia's going to probably get some good news tomorrow. Adam Anderson, the 6'4", 215, 220-pound outside linebacker out of Rome, a guy that I think is a top-5 recruit in the state. I think he's probably a top-25 recruit in the country. He's going to be committing tomorrow. One-time Georgia commit, backed off of it at G-Day and flipped at LSU. I think he's a guy to look out for. I certainly think Georgia's got a lot of momentum there. I put a crystal ball back, I think, a couple days before he decommitted from LSU. James Cook, the younger brother of Dalvin Cook, is kind of a scat back. He's kind of DeAndre Swift, except maybe a little bit faster and more explosive in that regard, not quite the between-the-tackles guy. I think he's a guy you can look out for. I also see him as a guy who can really step into a slot wide receiver role and make a huge difference. I also think Daniel Falele, if you guys haven't seen the video, and I got to give my buddy Jeff Centel props for this. He put it on his Twitter page. Go back and look at it. Daniel Falele, this kid is 6'9", 380 pounds, okay? He comes walking on that sideline Saturday, and that's the first time I've ever seen him in person. I'm standing there with Jay Gruce from UGA Sports, Matt DeBerry from Scout Dog Post, and we look at that kid like he's Heidi Klum walking down that sideline. Like, I mean, we look at him like it's old school Tyra Banks out of the Sports Illustrated catalog. Like we're following, and I just shake my head as he walks. I've never seen a guy that big. I mean, when I look at a guy like that, I immediately think, can he drink a whole barrel of beer? You know, can he drink 3 cases of beer? Because I think a guy that big can. And I just think of Andre the Giant immediately. He was just so massive. You know, he's one of those guys that you look at him and like his calves are as big as my thighs and his ankles are as big as my calves. I mean, he's just enormous. So I think he's the guy that you look out for there too. Still very raw. He's only played a couple of years of ball, of high school ball, and you know, from Australia originally. He's at IMG Academy where he squares off against some really good players every day in practice. So I think those are a few guys you look at. I think you also think about Jamari Sawyer, another 5-star kid, one of the best offensive guard prospects I think I've ever seen on film. Channing Tindall, an inside linebacker from South Carolina that Georgia's trying to get in there on. and a name that's kind of emerged as a bigger target for Georgia in recent weeks, Josh Davis, a 6'6", 300-pound defensive tackle, low four-star kid. He was here for G-Day. He was here for the Mississippi State game. He's a guy that at a Mallard Creek High School in Charlotte that just churns out big-time talent. Marquez North, the DJ Humphreys kid that played at Florida, they churn out big-time talent there. Mike Palmieri, the quarterback of the Palmieri. I'm getting actors and coaches mixed up. He does a really good job there putting out big-time prospects. So those are some guys to keep an eye on.
That was good stuff there. And I wanted to ask you, too, before we let you go, I'm assuming that, you know, whoever's committed to Georgia and, you know, but most of these other big schools are going to sign on sign on the first day of the early signing period, which is like a 3-day span in December, December 20th through the 22nd, I believe, are the dates. And is that, I mean, I know the first Wednesday in February is the, you know, the big national signing day and people take off work and, you know, we're at the Blind Pig and we're doing all kinds of stuff that day. But how much is this early signing period going to affect some of the drama from what's going to be National Signing Day in February?
Man, that's a case study. That's something that we're all going to learn together, I think. I don't think there are any definite answers as to what's going to happen in that regard, and I think it'll be interesting to see how it happens. I mean, I'm interested to see who pulls the trigger early and does go ahead and sign. I'm also interested to see, are there going to be any announcements that day? You know, I mean, that's what's interesting to me is, you know, is anybody going to treat that like National Signing Day and go ahead and say, well, I want to make my decision by then and do a hat trick, pull a hat trick on that day. So I think that's, you know, those are some things to look out for. I do think, though, and I absolutely feel a lot better for these coaches now. As, you know, Kirby mentioned it back in I think the spring, or maybe it was the summer. They're not going to have to babysit some of these guys where, you know, you're worried about somebody slipping in there in January on an in-home visit, talking a kid into an official quietly, behind the scenes and flipping a kid on you. If you get a guy signed, you don't have to worry about it. And that's just how it is. And I think that is I think that's something that's really, really big for these coaches, is now they can maybe pour their effort into a kid from the next year's class, or they can go out and try to fill another need in the class or something like that, rather than having to sit in a kid's living room and make sure another coach is not going to slip in there and make them feel like they're being neglected.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess the opposite of that is if you've got a commitment who doesn't sign early, then there's the angst leading up to the first Wednesday in February. So I guess there's
Listen, it's going to be the same vacuum. One way or the other, there's going to be drama. There's going to be angst. I think it's just a matter of, you know, what form is it going to take now? We're going to pour all this water into a different container here, basically. And, you know, it may not be a big box container, maybe a longer cylinder or whatever. It's going to take some shape or form, and it's still going to be pretty wild and interesting to follow. I just don't know if most of the drama is now going to shift to the early signing period, or if it's going to be dispersed throughout the months after that early signing period until the second one, or what. But, you know, obviously you won't have as many guys signing on National Signing Day, and it won't be let's count the letters of intent as they come in on, you know, that first Wednesday in February. But the drama is going to come one way or another. That's just the nature of the business.
Jake, before we let you go, Georgia's signing class in 2017 was obviously great. A lot of people were saying that the 2019 class is going to be the next one that's, you know, really, really great. But with Fields coming in and with a lot of big fish still out there in this class, I mean, could 2018 kind of just be one of those stacking classes type years and just keep it rolling?
Yeah, it definitely can. I mean, listen, if Georgia lands Adam Anderson tomorrow, that bumps them to number 6 in the country. And then you've got James Cook, another elite prospect. Jamari Sawyer, KJ Henry is another guy that's out there that could possibly go Georgia's way. There's still a lot of really big time players out there that could allow this class to slip into the top 3. I don't think you've got a chance to be number 1, but this can be another top 5 class. And like you said, stacking those classes and getting them on top of one another, I think is a big thing. And you know, this is something that Georgia can definitely. It didn't look so great here a few months ago, and there were a lot of folks worried about it. But at the end of the day, This has a chance to be another really special class and another really good class. And Kirby Smart's track record thus far, it's a short one, but I think it's enough to have confidence in him just by what he's done with the program on the field and off the field at this point. I think that the folks can have confidence this is going to be a really strong class.
Hey, thanks so much, Jake. By the way, we got an email from Tony. Actually, this is a good question, so I wanted to get it to you before we let you go. And I hadn't even really thought about this. Last year, there was a lot of unrest among the Georgia fans because of all the noon kickoffs. This year, there's been, night kickoffs. Do you think that affects recruiting positively? Now, I will say this. Georgia signed the third best recruiting class in the country coming off a bunch of noon kickoffs. So I don't know if that means anything, but do the night kickoffs help? I guess it helps if players have games the night before they can get to Athens. They got more time to get to Athens, but do you think there's anything else into that with games being played under the lights?
I think it helps. I really do. I think it also gets me in bed a lot later on Saturday night, early Sunday morning. But I think it does help. I think it helps with the energy. The recruits love the light-up Sanford Stadium thing. I think they really enjoy that part of it. But I think you hit the nail on the head more than anything. It helps so much with those game day plans when – I remember playing high school football back in the day, and you play I played in South Georgia. You play an away game at Brantley County on a Friday night. You got an hour and a half drive back home after the game. You get home get in bed, get settled by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. It's really tough to get up and make a 2-3 hour drive to Athens for some of these kids. On 4 or 5 hours sleep, and the parents too. So, I think that when you've got all day to make that trip and to get that figured out, it definitely opens doors to getting guys on campus. And not only that, but, you're a coach and you're relentless like this coaching staff is. You wake up that morning and a kid may be headed to Auburn for a noon game, and you wake up that morning, you get him on the horn, and you try to talk him into coming to your night game that night. It's going to be a lot more fun. So that's what you tell them, and I think the staff's probably done that a time or two.
Great stuff as always, Jake. We appreciate it. We'll catch you again next week, and we'll be talking a lot about the Florida Gators. Thanks, man.
All right, fellas. Y'all take it easy.
All right. Jake Rowe from Dogs247 and 247sports.com.